the Wizards group chat. I am your host, Ryan Oliver, alongside my man, Chase Carroll. We got a special guest in honor of the firing of Coach Wes Unseld, Believe in Wizards podcast host, Matt Moderno. Matt, thanks for joining us, man. How are you?
I'm great. I feel like the Grim Reaper after that intro, man. We just got rid of Wes. Like, no one's bringing Matt to bury the guy. I feel good about it.
Honestly, I just felt like you're the most plugged in person I know into the kind of the pulse of the team, probably have the biggest podcast in terms of covering the Wizards. You do such a phenomenal job. It's like, what better person to come and kind of chop it up about the firing of Coach Unseld? Chase, I don't want to forget about you. How are you doing, man?
Hey, man, I'm great. I'm good as every other Wizard fan right now that wanted Wes Unseld out the door. Well, not technically out the door, I guess. Yep. He's doing something in the building. What that is, I'm not entirely sure, but he's no longer the head coach. So it's a good day in Wizards land here, at least for me.
Yeah, well, let me set the landscape a little bit. So Wode, Shams, and the Wizards, I guess, released a press release kind of all simultaneously that Coach Unseld would be moving or transitioning to a front office role, would be relieved of his duties as head coach. At the time, we didn't know that Brian Keefe was taking over as interim this morning. So that news kind of trickled in throughout the day. I guess let's just start there. So he was 77-130 in his 2.5 seasons as coach of the Wizards. He kind of got fired literally like at the halfway point of the season. Matt, I'll start with you. What were your overall like instant impressions of this? Was this a surprise to you that it happened at the point it did? And how do you feel about it now that you've had some time to digest it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely surprised. I think I'll end up on like old takes exposed because I was like, oh, the dude is definitely going to make it through the year. I just didn't think there was a way that Ted was going to cut bait after they made such a big deal of like, we are keeping Wes for this year. It just doesn't kind of seem like the way they roll typically. So I thought he'd get the year and then be out the door immediately. But also after last night's game is like a little weird time to do it too, because they were like respectable against a good team for most of that game. Like they never really looked like they were going to win it, but they didn't just like roll over. There were so many other games this year where they were so flat and they just got like steamrolled. It's like, all right, that would have been the one to just like send a message and fire a dude. But whatever they call it in like business, like a landmark firing, you know, like you get rid of one dude to put everybody else on notice. I thought they could have kind of done that with Wes after, you know, blowing a 25 point lead or something, not after like, hey, we gave the Wolves a pretty good game. So the timing surprised me more than anything, I think.
Chase.
Yeah, no, I'm excited about the direction that this team's going. I know the front office, they've made a couple moves here and there that we haven't fully agreed with, but for the most part, we've loved the direction that the front office is going in, and they see exactly what we've seen from day one. Wes Unseld Jr. just, you know, we didn't have expectations for winning, but we had expectations for playing young guys. We had expectations for not blowing leads. We had expectations for having a competitive roster. At least I did. I know I was a little too optimistic on potentially the win-loss record here in Washington. Same. But overall, I didn't expect a great win-loss, but I expected competitiveness, and we have not gotten that. We've seen kind of, in my opinion, the team quitting on Wes Unseld Jr., and I think the front office acknowledged that as well. So the fact that we aren't even wasting any more time, I'm giving big kudos to Michael Winger, to Dawkins. I think this is probably a Winger call, but I'm super excited that we're not wasting any more time here with Wes Unseld Jr. And I mean, maybe we are. We're keeping him in the front office and I still don't exactly know what that looks like for him. It's probably not a lot. It's probably what some other guys have had in the past that are no longer here. But I'm excited that he's no longer going to be the head coach. I think as far as a rebuilding team goes, he wasn't the right guy. I don't think he's the right guy for any situation, really, but especially one where we're trying to rebuild. I think there's much better options. We'll see what Brian Keefe brings here towards the end of the year. But I'm really excited that we're not wasting any more time with Wes Unseld Jr. Let's see what we could do this offseason, maybe finding some veteran help potentially.
Yeah, I'll chime in here. I feel like the writing has just been on the wall that he wasn't kind of cut out for the job. I feel like nobody was really happy with him coming into year three as the head coach. I don't think you could find a Wizards fan that would say he did a good job. I think there were people out there that were saying, oh, he wasn't dealt a good hand, and, you know, he's doing the best with kind of like a short deck that he can. But I don't think anyone could objectively say he had done a good job. And I think that most people would agree, even going into the season, that he had done a subpar job. I feel like it was probably like a Leonsis thing that he was, that even though they fired the front office, that they were kind of tasked with kind of trying to make it work with Coach Unsell, given who his father was and that things of that nature. I obviously have been on this podcast saying since the inception of this podcast that I am like not at all in on Coach Unsell. And so I'm kind of glad that the front office made this decision when they did and didn't waste time trying to let him have the whole year. Cause I think you could feel just watching the games on TV. I guess I've been to one game in person this year, but just watching most of the games on TV, you could tell that the team just has no competitive spirit. And I think that that's the biggest letdown and the biggest kind of like dagger in the heart of like his tenure, is that the team to me just didn't really compete night to night, even when the personnel was better, in terms of just like the spirit of the team. And I think we all knew, including the front office and the ownership, that the team was going to be bad, right? Like the team wasn't going to win a bunch of games, but I think the spirit of the teams and the competitiveness was where it was just lacking the most. And you kind of heard that in the press conference that Dawkins and Winger had before the game tonight. They were talking about, there was just like a lack of competitive spirit. And I thought that was so telling in terms of like, okay, so at least like the front office is seeing what we're seeing as fans, and what Matt's talked about on his podcast, what we've talked about here, is that it's like when you're rebuilding, it's okay to lose games because you're losing with the purpose of trying to accumulate picks, to accumulate talent. But when you're building bad habits and you're not competing and things like that to help set a culture, you're losing a part of the rebuild that is necessary. And I feel like they realized that, and they wanted to see if, you know, Brian Keefe could maybe get that out of the same group and maybe build better habits going forward. Matt,
if they saw that though, Ryan, like why wait so long? Why did we need 41 games of that, or whatever the case was?
I hear you on that. And I'm with you. Like, I don't know exactly. I feel like they wanted to give him a fair shot. And I feel like that was a part, like that's the only reason I can think of, is like why they would give him half a season, is that they wanted to give him a fair shot to see, okay, here's like a large enough sample size where we can say, okay, we've given you half the season to see if you're going to be any better than like what we've seen before we're here. I don't agree with that. I would have let him go when they let go of Tommy Shepard, if it was up to me. Yeah. Do you feel like they, I mean, clearly you do, I guess, but do you feel like they wasted too much time? When do you think would have been the right time, Matt, for them to kind of pull the plug on the Wes Unsell thing?
I just wonder if there was something behind the scenes there. Like you guys were mentioning, like coming into the year, like that seemed maybe pre-arranged that he'd be coming back. And the fact that they got hired and all immediately said like Wes is back, I think that was probably a condition from Ted.
Agreed.
So I'm wondering if he said like, hey, you got to give him at least X amount of games to see if he can do something here, and like give him a fair shake. And if it still looks like shit, I'll let you move on from him then. So that's kind of what I wonder, if this is, you know, basically the halfway point. They were like, all right, we've all collectively seen enough. Like, let's rip the Band-Aid.
Well, to your point real quick, one of the most interesting like tidbits from the reporting I thought was interesting was Shams was on, I think, FanDuel TV on some show that he's on there, where he mentioned that the expectation league-wide was this was going to happen in the offseason, regardless of how well the team performed this year, that they were going to move on from Coach Unsell. So I thought that was interesting. Like, to the point you're making, is if this was kind of where it was going all along, then why are we wasting time? Mm-hmm. To the point you're making. What do you think, Chase?
Yeah, I definitely think that was Ted mandated, bringing him on back. And it is a little bit of a waste of time, in my opinion, for sure. But good on Winger for ending this now. Ted had to have seen what we're all seeing at this point. He's just not the guy for the job. And that's goes above win and loss here. We've mentioned before the season that this wasn't going to be about win and loss. It's going to be, is he blowing leads? Is he calling timeouts at the right time? Is he playing the same rotations, or is he changing things up, trying something new? That's just the big thing with Wes Unsell Jr. is he's going to live and die by his guys, whether it's working or not. Last year we saw it with Monte Morris. He wasn't a starting caliber point guard, but he kept trotting him out there each and every game. Same deal here. We're losing every single game. And I know that's kind of the plan from the front office, but
he hasn't even tried to switch anything up with the front, with the starting lineup. And I mean, I get that you have guys that you feel like you need to start, but try something new. Try, like, we have a 19-year-old rookie here who's really blossoming, showing so much each and every night, and you can't find a way to see what he can do in the starting lineup even one time. That's to me just not good when you're trying to have a rebuilding head coach in the building. That's not what you want to do. So he's kind of thrown himself out the door, not trying anything new. To me, that's really what's setting him apart as a good coach or as a bad coach. He's not willing to make the adjustments that good coaches are willing to make. So it was time to show him the door, unfortunately.
I've heard a lot of kind of comments since the firing that, you know, Wes was a really great basketball mind in terms of like tactically, but it was maybe the teaching part of it that he wasn't great at. And I'm not here to say whether Coach Unseld is a great tactician. I don't know, but I kind of am like, well, how do we know that to be true? Right. Like, he's been a solid assistant, I guess. And he's done a good job in that capacity, but how do people know whether he's a good tactician or not? Because I don't feel like anything that I've seen from him as a head coach of this Wizards team has made me think that he is that. I'm not saying he's not. Matt, do you see something maybe I'm not seeing that would lend you to believe that, you know, I don't know, maybe there is a guy in there who is really good at maybe one aspect of head coaching, but just couldn't maybe fully implement what he wanted to do?
I think from what I understand from people that are much smarter than me, a lot of times certain assistants will be responsible for certain aspects of how the team plays. So if he's the defensive coordinator, essentially in Denver, and they play better defense than their personnel should support, but they have a really strong head coach who can convince people to buy into the scheme that Wes is coming in up with, then I think that's a real data point. So whether or not he's the one coming up with those things here, but then couldn't communicate his own message, that's kind of where I land. I think the one quote that sticks with me from Jihadi, like, he was one of Jihadi's assistants while Jihadi was in DC. He said he knows his shit just might have to come through someone else's mouth. And I thought that was just like, that kind of summed up the Wes experience of like, it's very clear that these guys are not bought in to what he's telling them. And
right,
I just can't imagine that like all these other basketball minds would like lie and risk their credibility and come out and be like, he comes up with the smartest shit, and then have him come out here and just like land right on his face. So it can't be, I think, you know, that he's just this bad at running good stuff. I thought there were times, especially early this season, where they were running like really creative offense and getting a lot of good looks for people. And then you'd just see somebody go on like an NBA Street Volume 2 game breaker, you know, and Jordan Poole would be doing like five crossovers into a step back 30 footer. And you're just like, wait, what happened? Like, you could have kicked it to Denny for an open look in the corner or something. So I don't know. I think this was just, we've tuned you out. It's time to go. And even like last year. So you want one data point, like, you got to make the best of your personnel. I don't love the two drop coverage bigs together, but I think that was the best way to get their best personnel on the floor. And they were serviceable enough defensively for a large stretch of last season while guys were all still healthy. And then when people went out, it kind of cratered. So I think maybe that hurts the end of year metrics, but for a large stretch of the season, they were at least like solid. So, you know, I don't know. It's just, it wasn't great. I can't imagine that anyone's going to pick him up because he's such a guru, but I also don't think he's like as bad as we saw here either, if that makes sense.
Yeah, the truth's probably somewhere in the middle. I just, you know, I know everyone's been kind of beating him up since he's been fired, and I hate to pile on, but I just never really saw anything from the jump. I really wasn't the biggest fan of the hire. I've said it a bunch of times, I wanted Chauncey Billups to be the coach, whether that was a better hire or not. You know, I'm not saying he's lighting the world on fire either, so not to say that I was right or wrong in that feeling, but I never really saw it, and I definitely didn't see it besides that 10-3 hot start he had kind of to his tenure. I feel like we haven't really seen, even, you know, to the point you're making about the defense. I know he was known as a defensive guru when he was in Denver, and I just, that didn't translate to DC. And I'm not saying the personnel that he had was phenomenal to you know, to cater to that. But he didn't even, to me, get it to like near league average defensively, really at any point. And I just found that to be really disappointing, that like the one thing that we thought that we would at least get was kind of like a defensive identity that we never really got. But nonetheless, it's definitely, I think, a good day as a Wizards fan that they're taking this step. Chase, do you have any kind of final thoughts about your impressions of Coach Unseld and his tenure?
Yeah, I just would say we've seen a few different Wes Unseld Jr. teams now with a few different goals in mind. He started, we had goals of really at that time just making the play-in. He couldn't really get that done. And now year two, he had an even better roster, in my opinion. He had three guys that you can say are either maybe on the star caliber level or for us, at least three stars in the building. And not the best performance as a coach. He blew multiple 20 point leads, franchise record for blown lead, just really bad resume in his short time here in Washington. And I wish the best for him moving forward. I hope that he does bring value still in that front office role, whatever that may be. He clearly, I think, has a good basketball mind. So I'm not extremely upset that he's still in the building in some capacity. I hope he's, you know, he's clearly going to be financially taken care of here in Washington. So might as well get something for him, you know, out of him here in the last year of his deal. But either way, it hasn't been a great tenure here for Wes Unseld Jr., but we're finally moving on. I hope we are able to find the right guy in the offseason, because it seems like unless Brian Keefe really gives a good impression here in the late end of the season here, it's looking like it's going to be a new face in the building.
Can I give a hot take on that real quick, Ryan?
Yeah, go ahead.
I would put money, if it were like a Vegas situation right now, like who the odds betting favorite are, like I would make it Keefe right now. Just, I think they're planting the seeds already with the, like, we really want a player development minded coach being, you know, like that's already been the first thing leaked out. Some of the things they talked about him and his ability already to like get guys to buy in the way they want to buy in, but also grow here. I just think they're laying the foundation. It seemed when they hired, I thought it'd be more Vanderpool coming in. I didn't realize the, like, how deep he goes back with this front office. So it just seems like he's a there kind of dude. I could be wrong there, but this is a guy that's gotten a bunch of like interviews for head coaching jobs in the past. And it seems like this group of dudes likes to empower other people within their group. So I don't know. I just kind of have a hunch that they're going to give this guy every opportunity unless like the bottom totally drops out this year.
And I have another question for you, Matt. I'm wondering, you seem a lot more plugged in than we are, of course. So I'm wondering if you know, is Brian Keefe, does he have the ear of the players? Do you think like people in the building are buying into him?
I have no insight there whatsoever. I've just seen a couple like clips from practice and stuff where certain guys are like, you know, leaning over an iPad with him watching film. And I don't remember off the top of my head, and I've got a notebook somewhere of who like each of these coaches are kind of like paired up with player wise, or like who are their guys. But I don't remember who his crew is here to say, you know, if they were like the locked in ones or not. But I don't know if you can really say, right? Like if he's not the main voice, I think a lot of what those assistants do is kind of smooth things over, you know, behind the scenes between the head coach and like kind of make sure that, okay, guys, you know, keep plugging away. This is what coach really wants to see from you. So I think we'll be able to tell here in the first like 5 to 10 games if they rock with him or not. But I don't have anything for you now.
I want to ask you guys what you guys think about, I guess, now that time has passed and Unseld's been fired, essentially. What do you guys think about the Wizards picking up his option when they did? Do you guys feel like that was a necessary move? Obviously, they're on the hook to pay him through next year. Any thoughts on that, Matt? I'll give you the floor first.
Yeah, I mean, I said at the time he had to do it. I can't remember the last head coach that went actually into the last year of his deal. So it's just one of those things where you sign up to do it knowing that every coach gets that. They get 1 year beyond essentially what you may keep them for. Like he would have gone into next year with another 1 year extension, I think, unless they blew it out of the water this year. So I tweeted this out like when they re-signed him, like who was the last guy to do it? And someone like ahad me and named like one guy. It's like, okay, well, this 35 other coaches over the last 2 years that none of them went into the last year of their deal. So I just think you had to do it. You couldn't just say, hey, we basically don't F with Wes, you know, like you have to give him some confidence once you decided to keep him, and it's Ted's money. So if he's willing to spend it, like who gives a shit?
Well, I'll chime in. I at the time I didn't like it. I didn't think it made much sense in terms of, I just didn't think he was long for the Wizards. So I was kind of more just puzzled by it. But I think the more that time has passed, I agree with kind of where you landed. It's just kind of like the way things go in terms of how you handle your head coach and whether or not it clearly didn't impact their ability to just let him go. So that's really what I was worried about was, are they going to feel like they have to give him an even longer rope than they're already giving him if they want to pull the plug? And I was like you, Matt, I thought for sure that they were going to give him the year. Well, Chase and I had talked about it, and I said I would be pretty shocked if they didn't give him the full year to at least say, to be able to say, hey, we gave you the longest runway we really realistically could before pulling the plug. So I'm almost surprised. Just, I think it's like ingrained in me as a Wizards fan for them to be like super reactive and not proactive. Sure. And not even that this is like the most proactive move. I guess the most proactive version of this would be letting him go last offseason, right, when they brought in the new front office. But I'm most surprised that they just did something that had a little bit of foresight that, hey, like this guy just isn't the guy. We have someone in-house in Brian Keefe that maybe he could be the guy. And if he's not the guy, we at least want to be able to see, okay, here's a 41-game sample size. How does the team look at practice? How are they competing on the floor? How are they reacting to him, his message? Is the defense any better? Are the rotations more sound? Are the timeouts coming at the right time? Is he taking Poole out after Poole's having his best stretch that we've seen in 20 games? Is he taking him off the floor for 10 minutes to start the fourth quarter when he just scored 15 points in the third? Like, it was things like that that Wes would do that I think that there's a lot of obvious things that Keefe could do better. And I think they maybe just wanted just to give Brian Keefe the opportunity to show that maybe he could do that job. Let's kind of transition to that. What are your expectations, Matt, of Brian Keefe? And you obviously said you think that the odds are that he's kind of like their guy. What do you think about the potential coaching search going forward?
I think they'll give him every opportunity to be the guy at the very least here. Like if they look good and they see development from the young guys, they said that was the thing they cared most about. If we see Coulibaly take some strides or Denny add another facet to his game, or, you know, there's a good blend or platooning of Gafford and Bagley. Like I think that'll go a long way for him. Or you see any of the G League guys come in the second half of the year and, you know, see, like they've actually shown some progress, or if he can turn Johnny Davis into anything at this point, I think that'll go a long way with them and you know, kind of giving them some faith in his ability to work with guys and help them develop. So I don't know. I think we're going to see a name that it's, whether it's him or someone else, it'll be the guy with that track record. It's not going to be Doc Rivers or one of those kind of guys. It's going to be Lloyd Pierce or Kenny Atkinson or one of those dudes who cut their teeth as like, okay, I'm hours in the gym in my sweats with the player, you know, holding the foam pad while they, you know, work on their post-ups against me, like that kind of dude. That would be my guess.
Atkinson was the first guy that came to mind to me. I just was such a fan of what he did in Brooklyn with, they had no lottery picks. They had like, they were kind of just a team that didn't really have many assets going forward. And he really got like a group of kind of cast offs and former top picks, I guess, in like with D'Lo, for example. And he kind of really built an identity. And then it kind of got blown up when Kyrie and KD decided to come there, which isn't really his fault. But he's the type of guy that I'd really get behind in terms of if you want to build something from the ground up. Like we've seen that him do that before. And not that that team was some great shakes, right? I think they topped out as like an 8 seed or something. But in terms of under his tutelage with that before the Stars got there. But he's a guy that I would get excited about. What do you think, Chase?
He made Spencer Dinwiddie look like not a bum. So keep that in mind. He's absolutely the number one on my list. He was also the first person that I immediately thought of. If you can make Spencer Dinwiddie not look like an awful basketball player, you're a top coach in my book. But all jokes aside, he did really, I thought, made a real impressive job out of that team. It clearly topped out there as what I believe what the 7 or 8 seed, which in grand scheme of things, not that great. But that roster, I think it was on par with our roster last year, which we didn't even make the play in. You know, if you consider it from that perspective, I thought he did such an incredible coaching job that year. And I do think it's kind of crazy that he doesn't have a head coaching job as we speak. I think he's a incredible head coach in the league. Maybe he's better suited as an assistant. I don't know, but he did a real good job in Brooklyn. So I'd be happy with that hire.
Yeah, absolutely. Matt, do you have any more thoughts on, I guess, where the coaching search might go if it isn't Keith, I guess?
I've got one name that's very Wizards, not to be that guy. I'm going to save it for our pod tomorrow because I got a whole thing that I'm just going to make a shit show out of, I think. But, you know, there's just those kind of names, I think, that are out there. Like, I don't think he'll get another head coaching job anytime soon, but it's whoever like the next up and coming Lloyd Pierce is, somebody on someone's developmental staff that is a young up and comer or like a surprise kind of pick. I think that's where teams have seen some of these new school guys come in, the Dagnalds, the Hardys, like they've kind of like taken a jump out of nowhere. I thought like a Damon Stoudemire would be a guy that would get like an opportunity as an NBA head coach here pretty soon. I think that whole like switch up of things in Boston kind of derailed him, and he just got to Georgia Tech. Like, he's not going to leave there anytime soon, but I don't know, like those kinds of dudes. So without looking at staffs, I think that would be the kind of the profile I'd look for, I think.
Yeah, definitely. No, I agree with you. I want them to hire somebody that is really going to build a culture. I feel like that's the biggest thing. Like, I'm so sick of like, I feel like since, I don't know, like the John Wall era, it's just, there's like a aura of this team of just like laziness and like non-competitiveness some nights. And I hate that, you know. It's like, even, it's not always about like the talent on the team or that type of thing. It's literally about like, do you want to come out every night and play hard? And I feel like it's like a play hard thing with me that makes me like not want to watch the team some nights, even though I watch every game. It's, I don't have faith the team's going to try hard every night. And I want a coach that can get, I don't care if they're not going to win the game. Like, are you guys going to come out and give a ton of effort every night and play hard? And that's why when you see guys that come in like Amarui or Shamit that actually play hard, it stands out. You're like, oh, wow, like Shamit's playing pretty hard. Or, you know, oh, yeah, Amarui, he can't really play. He's not that skilled, but he's just trying hard. Like, I feel like that stands out on our team. But if you put any of those guys on a different team, it wouldn't stand out. It's just because on the Wizards, you just haven't had consistent try hard every night. And I feel like that's the thing that I want the most. Like, can you build a culture where the team is going to compete every night, no matter if they're expected to win 60 games that season or 6 games that season? So that's what I'm going
to
see.
For anyone listening to this, like, when we're saying try hard every game, there's going to be some asshole that's like, well, you know, every team doesn't try hard every night. You know, like, I get it. Every NBA team, like, drops like some serious eggs, you know, every once in a while. But when they got punked, like, that was it the first 3 games of the year or whatever, and just got like run off the floor to start the season and looked totally flat, that should have been the immediate, like, you know, warning bells are going off for everybody in that building, because it's just, you can't start a year that way. Like, you should be dying on the court the first game of the season to make sure that like you're at least competitive to through the third quarter. And when they weren't, it was like, oh, okay, this is going to be real bad.
Chase, you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah. There's definitely clear nights where guys are just not focused and not in it to win it. I think we're seeing now, most recently, we're seeing guys kind of playing for themselves, whether that be Tyus, not as much Tyus, although maybe tonight a little bit more so, but guys like DeLon even starting to go ISO ball more so than what I think they really should be in the league. Like, DeLon Wright is an incredible player, and he's shown more, I think, offensively than I knew he had earlier on in his career. But he's trying to turn into Kyrie here those last couple weeks. Like, that's not your game at all, and that's just to go back to Wes Unseld Jr. That's the kind of environment he's fostered here in the last couple of years, is guys kind of playing for themselves, and we're definitely seeing that more so now this season. And I hope a coaching change changes some of that, but we definitely have seen a lot of disinterest. For example, the biggest example is definitely Jordan Poole on nights that he doesn't have it going. He doesn't look interested. He doesn't look, if he's not scoring, doesn't look like he's going to try as hard on the defensive end. And there's nights that he definitely has more effort on that defensive end, but that's because he's scoring. And we need to figure out how we can, if you're not scoring, can you provide that effort that we need on the other end? Because you can't have both or neither. We need to have one or the other if you're not providing on one area. So that's just an example, Jordan Poole. It's not just him. It's plenty of guys on this roster that I think you could point out each and every night that you didn't try that hard on that play. Like, I understand the record. They know that they're not going anywhere this season. So maybe in their head they think, do I need to dive for that loose ball? Like, where does it bring me? And that's where we need that culture setter to let them know, yeah, this doesn't matter just for this year. We need to set a winning culture to as Washington Wizards. Like, we see Heat culture each and every day on Twitter. I you can't avoid people talking about the Heat culture over there. I want that. Like, I want to be that annoying team that everyone's like, oh, the Wizards culture. Wow. We definitely haven't heard anything close to that here. So yeah, I hope we find that winning formula here, both just players on court trying to win, but that starts really in the front office and in the coaching staff, more specifically the head coach.
I just feel like
Get Bagley, guys. He's playing hard as shit. Go find that dude.
Yeah, right? Yeah, I've loved Marvin Bagley.
Yeah, I mean, that was actually my next topic. So let's just jump right into the Marvin Bagley portion of the podcast. That trade, we talked about that trade on this podcast. And one of the things Chase and I both kind of touched on was we thought, in addition to getting the picks, that Bagley was just a talent upgrade on the roster compared to Muscala and Gallinari. It's a very low bar, so it's not saying a ton. But I think that Bagley has far exceeded any realistic expectations that anyone could have for him. I know that he's a former number two overall pick, but right out the gate, he had his fourth game tonight, but he had three double-double games right out the gate. I don't think he had a double-double tonight, but he still had a double-figure point game and played pretty well in kind of limited minutes now that Gafford is back. Matt, what have your early impressions of Bagley been?
I was very adamant that, like, after the third game he played, or before the third game he played, that there was a lot of like bench Gafford already. Why is Gafford back starting? But right. That was more from we just haven't seen enough to displace a multi-year returning player who's coming back from an injury. But if you see 10 games of this, I mean, you know, you may say he's better feasting against backups or figure out what your right fit is for the way you want to play. I don't give a shit if he starts, but he should absolutely be getting minutes. I think it's at least in an even platoon the rest of the way here, but he's not scoring because he's got like Kevin McHale post moves. Like he's not like dicing people up. And I think he did that kind of stuff at Duke. Like his baskets have been energy baskets. Like I will beat you to the rim. I will have offensive putbacks. I will run the floor really hard. I will cut, you know, I will cut down the lane here. Like, we've missed that. And that's not really a knock on Gafford. I think he tries to do those things. He had a couple good cuts for dunks tonight, but he's just not like an offensively inclined or savvy player. And I don't think he looks to score enough. Who'd he have on him tonight? He had some midget on him and wasn't willing to try to post the guy up and kick the ball back out. And it's like Bagley would have gone through that dude if he got that kind of mismatch. And I just think you need one of those kind of guys that's just like, all right, let me cook you right now.
Yeah, I've been so impressed by Marvin Bagley personally. We both talked, you know, the pod after we acquired Marvin Bagley, we talked about how we were really excited about the picks in that deal. We were kind of acknowledging that they were throw-ins in the deal. Of course, yep. We were getting the money off of Detroit's books there with Bagley, but We were more so excited, or at least I was more excited about the picks that we were getting in that deal. But obviously it was worth seeing what Bagley was, and you hear now about five games in, I'm more than impressed than with what I've seen from him. Just to your point, Matt, and to your point, Ryan, his energy around the rim is spectacular. It's something we've been needing here all year. When Gafford leaves the game, we have Gallinari moving a mile per hour, not even attempting to go for boards, not attempting to block shots. Or you got Mike Muscala, who I wouldn't say it's all effort on his part. I'd say it's maybe a lack of athleticism on his part. So to have a guy in the building in Marvin Bagley, whether he's going to be a long-term starter or not, I don't know. Maybe this is the best role for him, is just being a long-term backup center who provides energy and real good minutes off the bench. I'd like to see more from him. Like if we moved Gafford, I'm certainly not upset about it. I think his recent play makes Gafford more, I don't want to say more expendable, but if somebody's offering you something, like, you're not as hesitant to take it, I think, right now, seeing what Marvin Bagley can do. And he's under contract, of course, next year. So if we see a little bit more of this play here moving forward the next couple weeks, I definitely wouldn't be upset if we do see Gafford go. Not because I hate Gafford or because I think Gafford has a bad contract, because I don't. I think there's absolutely a world where you can keep both Gafford and Bagley on your roster. And because to Matt's point, they do bring different things. I think you get the finesse from Bagley. He also brings a lot of power, don't get me wrong, but I think there's that finesse around the rim that Gafford clearly doesn't possess right now. He's more, you know what Gafford's bringing you. He's going to swat shots and he's going to throw down dunks and he's going to be, strong around the rim, but he's not going to bring that finesse that I think we've seen here. Now five games in from Bagley, after one or two games, you'd say, okay, that's just Bagley being in a new spot. But I think now we're seeing five, six, seven games. If he can continue doing this, okay, this is a good player. We've seen, I think it's been more so lack of opportunity here early on in his career than it has been talent. Because I believe he was first team all rookie his rookie year, which of course, being the second overall pick, you should be expected to be, but he was that, and he put up decent numbers there in Sacramento, but it was really a lack of games played, I think. He injured early on in his career and never really had a true footing there, and clearly they were shipping him out to Detroit, and they really had no interest in building him up long-term there in Detroit. I think we're now seeing this year Monty Williams. We've had all kinds of questions here about Monty Williams on this podcast, and let's add another one to the books here. How could you not find any minutes for this guy over? James Wiseman was getting minutes over him early on, which I understand, another second overall pick there in the building, even younger than he is. But I think you would have to see in practice that this guy is doing these kind of things, right? Like, yeah. Maybe not at a $12.5 million rate over there in Detroit, but to give up two second round picks to get off this guy, and now he's putting up 20-10 numbers a couple games here into his Wizards tenure, I'm impressed.
I think the thing about Gafford, Bagley early on in his career, is he's kind of one of those players that what he did in college just didn't translate as smoothly to the NBA because he didn't have any touch from the perimeter to space the floor, but he's also not like physical or big enough around the rim, especially early on in his career. And I think it's especially players like Bagley, who have been top, you're the best player in your team for so long, and then you get to the NBA and your role isn't as clear. Like, you're not going to have the ball in your hands to dribble and make plays the same way as you probably have had your whole life. So then you're trying to find your footing as, okay, well, what is my role in the NBA? And the team's also trying to figure out how you fit into that. And I feel like now what I see is a guy that understands, okay, I'm not a star. I'm not going to be a guy that has the ball in my hands a lot during the games. So let me be good at what I can be good at, which is setting screens, rolling to the rim, and getting the hustle buckets around the rim. And I can put up solid numbers just doing that. I can get paid just doing that. And I think that he's a guy that probably realizes that he doesn't have a ton of opportunities left to prove that he is worthy of another $12 million a year contract. Like, he doesn't have that many opportunities, and he's 24. But what I mean is, if he doesn't come to DC and have a good showing, then where's that next team that after this contract expires?
They're in
next
Turkey
year,
somewhere. Yeah.
Exactly. That's going to want to kind of open the books up and pay him something. So what I see is a guy that's more understanding of who he is in the NBA, and he's getting an opportunity now. Okay, I'm not behind Jalen Duren. I'm not behind James Wiseman. I'm just behind Dan Gafford. And like, let's be honest, who has more of the track record in terms of like overall skill and talent? It really is Bagley. Now, Gafford's been a better player recently, but I would argue they're the same caliber of player. Whether or not everyone agrees with that, I don't know. But I think they're a similar caliber player. They're both probably better as backups, but can spot start and are, you know, be solid starters here and there. But anyway, so I'm saying all that to say, I think we're just seeing a version of Bagley who's like more comfortable with, okay, this is my role in the NBA. Let me be good at these things. Do you guys agree with that?
Absolutely. And what I've really enjoyed about him is his hands as compared to Gafford. I think on a pick and roll each and every game, that's the one thing about Gafford that does frustrate me. It's his lack of abilities, even on the glass. He can't really come down with boards cleanly sometimes. And it's on the pick and roll. If he doesn't get a clean, if it's not a lob, sometimes it's not being caught cleanly by him. And when Bagley comes in, you're seeing the catch on tough entry feeds in the pick and roll. You're seeing him catch tough catches off the boards, both offensively and defensively, but mostly on the offensive end. The fact that he's kind of become a vacuum towards the rim there, when the ball's flying off, he's been so good at figuring out where that might be going and able to get right back up for putbacks. And I think he and Gafford clearly provide different things. Gafford is a much better rim protector than he'll ever be. But Gafford also seems to struggle in positioning for defensive rebounds. Like if he's not getting that block shot, it's tending to be an offensive board for an easy putback. So there's things on the defensive end that I've even been seeing out of Bagley that I think just positioning wise has been better than we've been seeing out of Gafford. And he's not going to be the shot blocker or the intimidator that Gafford will ever be. But he does provide things that I've really enjoyed on that defensive end as well. But mostly from the rebounding perspective, that let's just compare him to Gallo and Muscala.
Oh, yeah.
He is providing so much more just from a visual standpoint. I can watch the game and not hate myself watching Bagley on the court, whereas Gallo and Muscala were very tough to watch. So just from that perspective, it's been a much more enjoyable five games. Obviously it hasn't translated to the win column, but I've enjoyed watching Bagley play. I've enjoyed the minutes that he's provided.
I think a couple of things you just hit on, Chase, are strength related too. Like that just seems to still be a problem for Gafford. And I'm blanking already on who it was tonight, but he like took the ball at someone smaller than him, bounced into them, and like flew off of them like he got, like a bomb went off and the other person just ran down the court with the ball. And it's like, I think sometimes he doesn't try to box guys out because he just gets moved too easily. So he's like, I'll jump that guy, and then he doesn't have the hands for it. And like Bagley already just looks stronger. Like he's bringing the ball down. He's going like putting his chest into people or shoulder into somebody's chest. I mean, and like, I don't know. I got to get like Gafford on Bagley's like weight room plan or something here.
If I was looking at them, I feel like Gafford would be the one that was stronger between the two, which is kind of funny. Just at like a glance physically, like I would think that Bagley would be more of the finesse guy that couldn't take the contact. But there was a play tonight where Bagley was going up against Kessler, who's like quite bigger than him.
He's
one of the better shot blockers in the league. And he just went at his body and got an and one in around the rim. And I was kind of surprised because I was like sure Kessler was just gonna swat it. And I feel like that's the kind of like the physicality to the point you're making that it's been really nice to see. I mean, Muscala and Gallinari were not bringing that level of physicality. And this is the type of trade that I really like from the front office. It's not just about the picks. Obviously, that is like kind of the headliner. Okay, we're getting this draft capital and in a rebuild, that's obviously very important. But I really like kind of taking on a guy like Bagley, because at the end of the day, you need talent. You can't just have a completely terrible roster. You want to have guys that are going to go compete. Maybe this is a guy whose value you can rehab and maybe flip him for assets down the road. Or maybe not even that. Maybe it's someone you do decide, hey, like, we really like having Bagley around. Maybe this is a guy we keep going forward. I mean, not that I really think he's going to be a part of the next good Wizards team, but you just never know. He's 24. It's not like he's 28 or 29. So it's just the type of trade that I really like. I like the talent upgrade. I like, obviously, the picks. And I really, I'm happy for Bagley to get a fresh start, because I think that the Kings and the Pistons thing just are two not so great environments, at least at the time. And not that the Wizards environment is phenomenal right now, but I feel like he'll at least have an opportunity to play 20 minutes a night. And if you're him, I mean, realistically, what else can you ask for when you're not, you know, you're coming from a situation where you're behind James Wiseman, who you're clearly better than, and you're not getting any minutes. So at least here, he'll seemingly get, I don't know, like 2/5 of the center minutes. You know, maybe even split if things work out well. And if Gafford gets traded, hey, it's going to be like open season for him. So
this is why, when people always say, though, like, you have to draft best player available, it drives me a little nuts, because we see guys like that. You end up with Bagley behind other guys at the same exact position, and they don't get a real opportunity. You see Detroit just take every big person they can get year after year after year, and then they don't all play. And it's like, I wonder why this guy didn't really work out. It's like, well, how was he going to? Like, he doesn't fit in the context of the rest of those guys. So it just, there's got to be some semblance of like making sure you give that guy an opportunity to succeed. And hopefully we're just going to see him now get that.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely agree with you. Let's kind of move over to the whole trade aspect of this. We're 2 weeks away from the trade deadline. Obviously the Wizards have already made a trade with the Bagley trade, but there's just been a lot of buzz about guys that are available, maybe not available. We know like the big names on our team are Tyus Jones and Kuzma in terms of trade. Let's start with maybe Kuzma. There's been some recent buzz. I guess Woj mentioned on a podcast that the Wizards were reticent in the availability to Kuzma, which I didn't know what that meant at the time. So I had to literally like dictionary.com it and be like, what does reticent mean? But it seemed to mean that it's like they're willing to talk trade, but they're not like sending offers back to the other teams. They're just kind of like, oh, if you want to talk to us about Kuzma, we're willing to listen, but we're not necessarily dying to get rid of him. Where are you at, Matt, with the whole Kuzma trade thing? What is your pulse on whether or not the Wizards want to move him now and whether they should move him now?
I mean, if you believe that kind of reporting, which who knows what's posturing and you know what isn't at this point, I think where they seem to be going with this makes sense to me. The deal's friendly enough that he's not going to get less appealing to teams as he gets further along in years. He's probably not going to regress as a player at, what is he, 27, 28? Like, we're not at the end of his shelf life, so I wouldn't be in a rush to do it. So if they're waiting for, like, exactly the right deal, great. But there doesn't have to be this, like, impetus on we have to get him out now. So if you get a sweet offer and someone gives you two lightly protected firsts or a young guy or like whatever the case may be, whatever you've decided the line is for him, like, cool, do it. And if he's happy with that, great. Like, you haven't, you know, you've given him wherever he wants to go. That's good for future free agencies and people like that, because I'm sure Kuzma talks to a lot of guys, so everybody's happy. But I wouldn't be in a rush to be like, well, we've got to move him for some reason. Only the Rui 3 second round picks and whoever's this year's Kendrick Nunn is available. Like, I guess we've just got to take it. So like, Tyus is the one where I think he probably has to go out the door just because of the contract situation. And it just, like, does he really fit on actually all that many teams? He's like basically an undersized, like, scoring guard, basically is how he's played this year for a lot of the year. And not everybody can really make him fit. He probably wants to start, so he's not a starter. So is he going to re-sign with you? So you're just trading for a rental, but we have to trade him, but we don't really have leverage. So I think he's the guy where, like, we're going to be surprised by, like, how minimal the return is. Like, if he gets a similar to what Monte Morris got, despite being a better player, I wouldn't be really shocked by that one. So I think he goes and we're going to be bummed out by it and see how the rest of them go.
Yeah, I'm I'm with you on that, Matt. I do think, and I won't be super upset with whatever we get for Tyus. I've been thinking the same thing. I'll take really just about anything for him, considering he has an expiring contract, and he's been pretty good here the last, few weeks or so. But at the same time, he's not a starting point guard in this league, in my opinion. He is better suited as a backup, and no one's really going to be giving up premium dollar, I think, for a backup point guard on the last year of his deal. While he has, of course, he's the assist to turnover king every year. He and Monte Morris are so good in that role. And as a backup, I think both of those guys are super valuable in this league, but I don't think he's going to be going for a ton at the deadline. I agree with you. I know we're all hoping for a late first round pick. I'm not expecting a late first round pick in the deal. I'd love a young player and a second. That's ultimately my goal, a decent young player and a second round pick, maybe two, but I'm not expecting a huge haul for Tyus. And I'm with Matt as well on the Kuzma aspect. I'd love to be able to trade him at the deadline. I do think if we can get the haul, do it, because the sooner you can start this rebuild, the better, in my opinion. But you can absolutely have Kuzma in the building on that descending contract and still enjoy what you have as far as a trade asset in the next few years. But he's still playing good basketball. Like, you could absolutely see Kuzma on the next good Wizards team. I don't expect that to be the case. But I'd love to deal him at the deadline if you can get what we want for him, which is a big if. But with the biggest piece now off the board in Pascal Siakam, I do think Kuzma is potentially second or third next guy in line here. So if a team is willing to give up what they think is suitable for Kuzma, give it to me. I'd love to have it here at this deadline.
Yeah, I think that's kind of where I land too, is that I feel like it just has to meet a certain threshold of a deal, right? It's not just, hey, we want to move them, so let's take, a slight offer. That's not really what we're hoping for. I think that because the deal's fresh, it's a declining deal, and he's not that old, the points that Matt kind of made and you've made, Chase, I just feel like I definitely would be ears very open and willing to listen. And I think that if a team really comes correct and is willing to kind of meet that threshold or anywhere near it, I would strongly consider it. But I don't see the rush. I do think there's a part of me that feels like I haven't liked Kuzma's play over the past couple weeks as much. I think there was a point earlier in the season where I was like, wow, like he's really playing well. Like he's getting his teammates involved. He's just putting up, like, if these numbers were in a winning context, they would be like, hey, should Kuzma be considered for All-Star? Like that, like not actually, but like you would hear that more if he was on a better team. Yeah. And I thought he was playing pretty well. But lately I just haven't liked what I really have seen from him. And I think that he's kind of showing some of those traits that make some people just not as high on him. And I think that a part of it is kind of what we have touched on a ton on this podcast, is that the Wizards are a team full of people that are like punching above their weight, and they're playing in roles they shouldn't be in. And we've kind of talked about that at nauseam. We all realize that Kuzma would be like the third option at best, probably like a fourth option on like a good team. But in the context of the Wizards, he's their best player. So he's just punching above his weight. And I think that, like, I try to remember that when I get down on him, like, oh, he's doing not being efficient, or he's doing this or that, that like he's just above his britches. Like he's just not supposed to be doing the level of usage that he has. It's just like kind of through the roof for his caliber of player. And on a different team, you wouldn't be in that same role. So, but I haven't liked what I've seen. So I think what I'm ultimately trying to say is I do wonder, is if they hold on to him for longer, is there going to be more tape on him of like not so good play, and that kind of hurts his value? And maybe that's just my like paranoia about like wanting them to be proactive. Like I'm so used to the organization being reactive and not proactive that I don't want them to like sit, like hold the bag too long, and then his value goes the other way a little bit. And it's like, oh yeah, actually, like, we're not like dying to have Kuzma. Maybe he's just like an inefficient chucker on a bad team. I just want them to cash in on the chip at the best time. And so I think that's my only worry. And I think his value in the offseason would still be similar to what it is now. But I don't know how much longer past this offseason I would want them to sit on Kuzma. What do you think?
I think the nice thing there is, first of all, I agree with you on the play for most of the last 2 weeks. I thought last night was okay because he was sort of deferential and got people involved and rebounded really hard. And then tonight, like, he shot a lot of times, but he was reasonably efficient, and they also kind of needed all those points. But it's, I think, exactly what you just said, punching above the weight class. Like, they had him chasing Jordan Clarkson for most of his time on the court tonight. And it's just like, we don't have guards for that. Like, we needed him to be the Jordan Clarkson stoppers. It's just kind of wild to me in the first place. But I think the nice thing here is you have seen him be a complimentary piece on a good team. So teams don't have to envision him in that role. They've already seen it. And I think most of them will understand what you just said context-wise. Like, the Wizards are asking him to do a lot of shit that he probably shouldn't ever have to do. Like, if you're a good team, it's maybe okay. Two guys are out injured. It's nice to know he can do this for a night, or maybe, you know, ramp up enough to win you a game, but you also don't have to rely on it every night. I think that's a much better position to be in. And, you know, these NBA teams are going to be smart enough to be like, all right, like, we're not going to ask this dude to come in here and shoot 25 times. And you probably have to have that convo with like him or his agent or whoever before you make that deal of like, how do you see yourself on our team? And if he's like, oh yeah, like, I'm going to lead the team in scoring, then maybe you don't want to make that trade. But I got to imagine he's also savvy enough to know that that's probably not going to be where he gets, you know, where he gets like placed in the pecking order anywhere else.
My view on Kuzma is that he knows the player he is. And I know that his efficiency has definitely taken a fall off these last couple of years, but he's known who he is in this league from the time that he was in LA. He's clearly been a competent player his whole life, but he took that back seat to LeBron and he took his role and he provided probably as a third or fourth best player on a championship roster. So we've seen it here to your guys' point. We've seen it already, whether he's willing to take back some of what he's gotten here in Washington, we'll see. But I think he's the type of guy who understands who he is as a player. And while he takes some bad shots here now sometimes, I think he would be in the right environment, a really good piece for someone. So hopefully somebody can see, you know, some team can see through these last couple of weeks and understand that this hasn't been the best Kuzma, but if we did have the best Kuzma on our team, he could be the deciding factor. And I really do believe for some teams, if he did rein it back a little bit, he could be that deciding factor for one of these fringe teams who is right there on the cusp of taking that next step. I think he could be a real help, especially, you know, I think he is an underrated defender. I think that's something that he's provided more than people do give him credit for. I wouldn't say he's an elite defender or anything, but he's definitely not a guy that you're targeting on the defensive end. So to me, he could be a valuable asset to the right contender. So I hope people see through these last couple of weeks shooting wise and see the entirety of the player, because I think it's a real good player here the last couple of years. He's taken so many strides.
Can I throw one your guys' way here for just a second? You've got Kuzma, Gafford, Tyus, DeLon, Landry. Five guys. I put the over under at 2.5 of them are gone after the deadline. Are you taking the over or the under?
I'm personally going over.
Okay.
And I would say I think Tyus is 100% out the door.
Yeah.
And I would say DeLon should be out the door, as well as Shamet. So those are the three that I'm trying to get out the door. We don't really have too many young guards in their place, but that's what I want to see. I want to see some young guards in the building. Now we have a pretty young center rotation in Bagley and Gafford. I think you're pretty set there. I think even Gafford could be out the door if the right offer is coming for him. So to me, I think I would say three or four guys are hopefully out the building here. I'm not predicting that Kuzma's out, but I definitely wouldn't be surprised if he is either. So if we're giving me all those options here, over under at 2.5, I'm going three. I'm saying over.
I think that's where I am too. I think my guess is that Shamit, Tyus, and Gafford are going to be gone. I think that's where my gut is. I think I'm more 50-50 on Kuzma, leaning towards him staying. I just kind of get that impression. And I guess when guys like Woj say, they pick certain words, like Brian Windhorst is one of those guys that picks certain words where it's like, mm-hmm. if you hear the way they phrase stuff, it's intentional. They're very intentional with the way they phrase stuff. So when Woj mentioned that they weren't, I don't know, is active. And even like Mark Stein reported that they're looking for better first than the Pacers got for Siakam. And I feel like the market with first round picks is just different than it used to be. And teams are really hesitant to put those like good picks on the table. And if they're not like at least one good pick, I don't really see what the point of moving him right now is if you're not getting at least one good pick. And I think I'm struggling a little bit to find that team at this point. Where I see them saying, hey, we want to put a good first round pick on the table because we think Kuzma could get us over the hump. Like, I thought Indiana made a lot of sense before Siakam, but now I don't really see it. And they weren't even willing to give up like Jairus Walker or Mathurin for Siakam. So they're definitely not, wouldn't have been willing to give it up for Kuzma. And I just don't really know. I think Kuzma is like a guy that can fit a bunch of different places, but two of the places, also Miami was a place that I thought made a lot of sense for a similar type deal that they did for Rozier, which was the 2027 first, I think it's top 10 protected, and then goes unprotected in 2028 in Kyle Lowry's contract. Like, that was literally a very similar trade to what I kind of thought made a lot of sense for Kuzma. And I guess some people would say Rozier is a better player. I'm not sure where I land on that one, but So I'm not sure about Kuzma. I definitely think Shamit is gone. Like, I would be shocked if Shamit wasn't in a trade. I'd be disappointed in the front office if they don't get something for him. And then I think there's going to be one guy that's just kind of like, they traded Gafford, or they traded Kispert. I want to ask you guys about Kispert, actually. I feel like he's a guy that fits on any team, especially like a contending team, because every contending team needs shooting. Where are you guys at in terms of like, should the Wizards be prioritizing? I mean, prioritizing might be a strong word, but should they be looking to potentially give Kispert an extension, or should they be looking to move him at this deadline? Like, where, Matt, where do you land on like where maybe the team should be with Kispert right now?
Copy and paste everything we said about trading Gafford or trading Kuzma. Like, if you can get the right deal, you do it. I don't think you have to rush to do it. So if someone's going to give you a protected first round pick back for him, great. I wouldn't be in a hurry to trade my young, I think slightly improved former 15th pick for like 2 second round picks or something like that. I don't see like the value in doing that when you've got this many second round picks already. So, I'd be judicious about the whole thing. Like, if you get the right deal, cool. If not, cool. He can kind of fit in with anybody. Teams will always need a shooter, you know, or shooting of some sort. So you can make him work with whatever the next group is. And I don't know. I don't know, Corey, maybe this is totally off base. I don't get the vibes that he's like the dude like demanding, like, if I'm not a starter next year, I'm going to like ruin the locker room. Like, if he was just like your sixth man shooter scorer guy, like, I'm sure he'd fit in just fine.
Yeah, I'm on a similar boat there with Matt. I like Corey Kispert, and I had big visions for him this year. I thought he was going to probably take the biggest leap of the Wizards that were returning, and that included Denny. And for me, Denny has been the guy who's taken the biggest leap. I expected Corey to be a little bit closer to what we saw towards the end of the last season, where, of course, he had more opportunity to showcase what he could do on an individual level the last 2 weeks or so. He was averaging over 20 points per game in that period, and he was really handling the ball a lot more than he's really shown here this season. And I don't think that's necessarily his fault. I think that's been more, of course, he's being placed in a corner now, which maybe is more what he is long-term, of course, a three-point shooter. That's what he does best in this league. But At the same time, he is one of the worst defenders in the league, I would say, especially when you pair him with Tyus Jones and with, you know, with Poole. That's a real awful, if you have all three of them out there at the same time, that's got to be one of the worst defensive trios in the league. So it doesn't necessarily make sense to, of course, trade him for nothing, but at the same time, he doesn't necessarily make sense either with the direction, I think, of the team. So I'm not dead pressed on getting him out, but I would like to get other young guards in and get them opportunities and see who the right combination is, because what we have in there right now, it's not it. I think, of course, Tyus is out the door, but at the same time, I don't think Poole and Kispert is a good matchup either. So maybe, yeah, of course, he's better suited off the bench, and every team needs shooting. So if I'm not looking really to extend him right now, that to me, it would be a wait and see. You know, give him the last year of his deal, of course, and see what happens. But to me, I'm not looking to extend him right now. I always thought it was going to be between Denny and him, and of course, Denny got it. And who knows? Denny's been performing a lot better since he got his extension. Maybe Corey hits a whole nother gear if he got his too. Who knows? But to me, it was always between those two, and Denny got it. So we'll see what this front office thinks. I would look to deal him if you could get something good.
I think at this point they're not going to get that late first type. I just don't think he's had a good enough year to warrant that. I you know, he's a good shooter, obviously, but that's about all he brings to the table at this point. So I think the Wizards honestly would be better off just trying to find a team-friendly extension that would make him maybe more valuable to trade next year, you know, that type of thing. But I've made that point on this podcast before, so I won't go into it. I think that's just kind of where I would be at, unless I got a really good offer, which would, I guess, just be like a protected first. But I just don't really see that happening. Matt, before we let you go, I got to ask you about Johnny Davis. I just have to ask. We haven't really seen much of Johnny Davis. He's been in the G League. You're more plugged into the G League than pretty much anyone else, or like the Go-Go specifically, that anyone else that I know that covers the team. Where are you at with Johnny Davis? Does he have any chance of sticking in the NBA at this point?
Who is that again? Right. Yeah, it's tough, man. Like, it sounds bad because I've been the guy that just preaches patience. Like, I keep receipts on all my draft takes. That you will never find a draft take that says the Wizards should take Johnny Davis 10. So I've like become that guy associated with him solely because I think patience always makes sense with certain draft picks. You've got Jalen Suggs that was like rated the worst player in the NBA as a rookie. And now he is just MFing dudes defensively, and people don't even want to dribble when he's guarding them. So I thought Davis could, like, not to that extent, but still take a leap into like serviceable role player. And I don't know, man, like I said, I don't like to give up, but it just sort of feels like that ship has probably sailed at this point, at least, you know, him doing it here. Like you mentioned him playing in the G League, and he actually hasn't even really done that. He's only played 3 games for the Go-Go this season. So he's just not playing basketball for basically another year. And there's been some leg injury, some elbow injury, some probably mental injury, just looking at like how confused he looks on how to shoot a basketball. And I think you've just kind of like killed the confidence. Like there was actually a shot of him tonight, and I wanted to like go back and record it, but I was a little too lazy, and people are listening to this in audio form and won't do any good. But he was just like slumped over in his chair next to someone, like staring forward blankly at the ground, and he just looked sad, and I feel sad for him. Like just set him free, see if he can end up somewhere. Maybe he goes and plays in Istanbul next year and has a really good year and restores his confidence, and he can make a comeback or something. But it just doesn't seem like it's gonna work out here at the very least.
Yeah, it's a sad situation. I just feel bad for him, I guess, at this point, to your point, where I wasn't as plugged into that draft, so I didn't have a strong feel on Johnny Davis or who I wanted them to take. So I just was, you know, taking it kind of face value. He seemed solid enough based on what I had seen at college. I know the fan base didn't seem thrilled about the pick, but man, this has just been brutal. Like, I thought towards the end of last year, you saw a couple of flashes of, okay, like there could be a
summer
solid
league, you know, yeah, he looked better.
Yeah. A solid player in here. Maybe he ends up, like, I kept saying, like, I think he could be like a Dante DiVincenzo type, like an eighth man, yeah, who can come in and give you like 20 minutes a night and play some tough defense and potentially knock down open shot here or there. Nothing special, but a guy that was like a solid role player. Like, that was the upside. But I just don't even see. I would be surprised if he's on an NBA team in like 2 years. I really would be. I think that he'll get another shot probably because he's just a top 10 pick and some team will add him as a 2A or something, but it's just sad. That's all I have to say. Chase, do you have any thoughts on Johnny Davis?
Yeah, I think I have to go back to summer league time and delete a lot of tweets that I put out about him. Some embarrassing tweets there that I could look back at, and I also own all my L's. I said that Johnny Davis during the summer league, I said he could absolutely be a long-term role player in the NBA. Specifically said he could be a long-term role player for us in Washington. I said, discard his draft position. He as long as he's a productive role player in the NBA, I'm going to be happy. And yeah, I've thrown all that hope out here just a few months later. It's pretty crazy. Every time you see him on the court, he just doesn't look like a NBA talent. And it's definitely confidence at this point. And I don't think he can just regain that in a year after being now bad here two straight years to start his career as a top 10 pick. I think it's over. Personally, I wouldn't be upset if they, you know, cut him and, you know, used his roster spot elsewhere. But of course there's other guys I'd cut before him. Anthony Gill, we've mentioned him each and every podcast probably at this point. Cut him now. What is going on? We could even discuss how Wes Unseld Jr., his guy is no longer there. So what are we even keeping this guy around for at this point? But anyway, back to Johnny Davis. He just has been a real disappointment here in the league. I don't even see role player at this point in his future. So for me, I wouldn't be upset if we cut him now and see what we could get. He's young, so maybe if we're Washington, looking at the grand scheme of things, there's no need to cut him now. But I just don't see it.
I think the only reason you don't do something like that is he probably makes like $6 million a year. So at least see through this trade deadline if he can be salary filler for some other deal you want to make. But other than that, that's kind of the extent of the usefulness I think we're going to see from him this season at least.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Matt, we're going to let you get out of here. Let's leave on that note. It's kind of sad to leave on the Johnny Davis note, but at least
say one happy thing. Wes is gone. Just something we got to rally to end here.
That's the one bright spot. I never root for people losing their job, but it was the right. It was
didn't
the
lose
right
his job. Call. He just got a different job. That's all. We can be happy.
That's a great point. He got promoted actually to a front office role. So
bailing up, baby.
I'll sell it as that. Even though we kind of all know that if he wasn't an unsell, that probably wouldn't be the case, but at least they're doing him a solid. They don't have to kind of say, oh, they fired him. He's transitioning to a different role. But I am happy. I think it was the right move. I think that hopefully we'll see some better play on the court. But Matt, tell the people where they can find your great podcast and your great work.
Believe in Wizards. I appreciate the word great. I don't think that's true, but it's okay. I appreciate you lying, and I will pay you handsomely on the side here for such nice words. Guys, this is so fun. For people behind the scenes, like, this is the Wizards group chat podcast, and it's awesome. We're all in a group chat together, and this is the kind of convo we're having all the time. So it's great to do it like verbally for a change. So thanks for having me on. You guys do a great job. I check every episode. I would encourage everyone else to do the same thing because you guys are just smart, knowledgeable basketball fans and also great dudes. So I love it.
We appreciate that. Thank you, Matt. Chase, do you have any parting shots for us?
Thank you to friend of the pod, Matt, for coming on. We don't get too many guests on. So every time that we do, we especially love having Matt on. So thank you again for coming on, man. Wes Unseld Jr. is gone, baby. Let's go celebrate however we'd like to at this moment.
There you go.